Franchise Fan Guys. Hey there! Did you miss the second live session on aliens? No worries if so. We recorded it for you. You're welcome. This Thursday, January 20th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, Tom, Skid, and Andy are doing another live video session on the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise. Tickets are available at www.brightlive.com. See you there.
I am Groot.
Welcome to Franchise Fan Guys, the Bright Session for Alien Part 2. Thank you all for coming to this second session on the Alien franchise. This time we're going to cover the entire franchise. Last time we just covered mainly 1, 2, and 3, and mainly just 1 last time. So this will be a lot of fun. I'm Tom Breifogel, joined with Andy Schmidt and Skid Marr. And the three of us are going to get the conversation started, and then we will, like Xavier was saying, start bringing you up on stage when you ask some questions. So to start tonight off, Andy and Skid, is Alien a horror movie or a science fiction movie? Or the whole franchise, not the movie?
I want to interject quickly because I had one of my patented hilarious self-introductions that I had ready. I thought you were going to throw it like you usually do.
Okay, let's pretend none of that happened. I'm Tom Breifogel, joined with Andy Schmidt and Skid Marr. How about you guys introduce yourselves? Andy?
Hey, I'm Andy Schmidt, and Skid's got a pithier intro than I do, as always.
Hey, I'm Skid Marr, and well, that explains it. The Skid Marrs always were a bit twitchy. See? Hey, aren't you glad that I stopped everything in its tracks so I could get that in?
This is good. This is good.
You're welcome.
Did you say you're welcome or welcome?
You're all welcome.
You're all welcome.
Everyone here is welcome. Don't bother thanking me. It's implied.
So the franchise as a whole, science fiction or horror?
All right. You want to go or do you want me to go?
You go, Andy.
Okay.
You're good at these things.
Good. Yeah. I'd go primarily horror, but obviously there's both, right? But I'd say primarily horror, although some lean more into sci-fi than others, but they're set up as horror films. They've got the horror tropes that the sci-fi tends to be more of a setting and gives you kind of some cool equipment and that kind of thing. But really, from a genre standpoint, they're horror dressed in sci-fi, the same way that Star Wars is fantasy dressed in sci-fi. I would have argued Prometheus is more science fiction than horror, except all the scientists are dumb.
Right. It's like dumb guy fiction / horror.
Right. How'd I do, Skid?
That was great. That was great. Okay. That was a good start. Right.
Thanks.
I agree. I agree with what Andy said. I think that I think that was, as someone who is a notorious fraidy cat, that is a huge reason why the action and sci-fi elements work as well as they do in this franchise, because it has that strong horror root, set of roots. And it's when you have an antagonist that's that terrifying, the way that it's set up in the first movie, like when you bring the action like you do in Aliens and in varying degrees of success in the other movies, it's great, because it's just like you have this super scary thing to fight against. It's terrifying. And when you get a victory against it, it's like you want to jump out of your seat. It's great.
Do you find the alien in Alien more terrifying, or in Aliens are they more terrifying, or Alien 3? Like, where's your alien scares me-o-meter? Where do we rank on those? And then we'll branch out.
I think it's got to be Alien is probably the scariest. And I think that's more because, well, for a couple of reasons. One is, us, like, this is the first time we're seeing it at all. Like, we're being introduced to this concept.
Okay. Yeah.
And also because the people who the protagonists of the story are uniquely ill-equipped to deal with this thing.
Whereas, not a bunch of badasses.
Not a bunch of badasses. Ah! Yeah. So it's like, Whereas, you know, the Colonial Marines are a little better, like, equipped. But that's why it's awesome, because it's just like they, you know, it's just like, okay, we saw this thing wipe out Ripley's crew. We saw it terrorize her crew. And now there's a whole bunch of them. But now it's just like, we got to put guys with pulse rifles. Let's see what happens. And they still end up pretty much getting their asses kicked, which is even better. So,
so yeah, so Alien is definitely a horror movie. And it is paced like a horror movie. So there's more of that, like, things are creeping up on you and is it around the corner? Aliens, for me, because, I mean, I was freaking 12 or some maybe 10, some inappropriate age to be watching Alien. And that movie gave me such anxiety. I wasn't, like, scared in that horror sense, right? But, like, they were all over the place. And I felt like I was tense the entire time. But that's different than, like, the feeling of, like, is it around the corner sort of thing.
Yeah, there are tons, you know, of jump scares in Aliens too, but yeah, it's a different,
there are and Aliens is the only one of these movies that really leans into action. That delves into the action genre. And obviously we talked on the podcast, especially when we were talking about Terminator, about Cameron's contributions to the action genre and Michael Bay's misinterpretations of everything that he did. But yeah.
I like Kevin's comment. There's more movies after three. Yeah.
There are, Kevin. And we're going to talk about them. Which one should we talk about first? Somebody has to tell us which movie we're going to trash first. That's how this works. You have to participate. If it's your first night at Bright Alien topic session, you have to fight
you have to fight with us.
I've never fought with somebody virtually, but we're gonna figure this out. Prometheus.
All right,
Prometheus,
okay.
Gauntlet is thrown. Okay,
all right then Claire, right, suggests Aliens after that. Okay
will
be cool. Fun. This will be fun. We'll do it'll be like a Pulp Fiction. We'll do it completely out of chronological order.
All and right, like the Prometheus. Alien franchise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Sam, you saw Prometheus fairly recently, right?
Yeah.
Was that the first time you saw it?
Mm-hmm. I'd never even heard of it until we started talking about doing the Alien franchise. I'd never heard the word Prometheus.
Like, not in your myriad of Greek mythology classes or anything?
I went to college for music. They skipped that part.
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh.
Gotta be some classical music.
God, I could have like, sworn
written about Prometheus.
You would have had to have played Ode to Prometheus, but okay. So what do you think of it?
I enjoyed it a lot. I wanted Alien Covenant to be more of a direct sequel to it, even though that was kind of cool. How I'd never seen that, where I was expecting it to be a sequel, but then in the next one, they're all dead, or most of the people are dead. Prometheus, I thought, was really entertaining. I thought I definitely paid attention very hard. I feel like if you didn't, it would be a really confusing movie. And I thought it was awesome. It answered questions I didn't have at all. So I wasn't curious about those things, but I was excited to see more about Wayland. I was excited to hear, like, I wasn't annoyed when I learned all of these new facts,
right.
But I had a great time watching it. Probably my third, I'm not saying third best in this franchise, but my third most fun. I think mine will go 1, 2, and then Prometheus as far as just having fun one night watching movies.
Okay.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird, but it's fair.
I might actually agree with that. I think I might actually agree with that ranking.
Cool.
As far as
in terms of funness.
Fun watching it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What about you, Andy?
Well, no, man, Tom just reminded me of something that just is cracking me up inside. Cause, like, one of the notes that I used to give people writing comics, like, if you're writing a Marvel comic and you're writing a story about why back in 1983, Spider-Man was able to beat up Fire Lord when that shouldn't have happened, then and I would give this note a lot, like, you're answering questions no one is asking, right? Yeah. Like, no one cares. Like, clearly you got a bug back in 1981 when this comic came out and you want to address it in the Marvel comic, but, like, nobody else cares. And, like, that's, like, it's one of those things that when, you know, as a writer, I get that note, or as an editor, I'm giving that note. You know, it's one of those things where you're like, oh shit, yeah, like nobody, like diehard Alien fans are like, where'd that space jockey come from? But then they don't really care. You don't really want an answer. And so it was just kind of, Prometheus is like, it is a movie of exactly that, of like, we're going to answer questions no one's asking.
Right.
And I think that's bizarre and odd, but it also stood, I did think it stood on its own as a film. Like, you could go into Prometheus not knowing anything about Alien, and it's a movie. It has its faults. The scientists are all pretty dumb, but it stands on its own. And in fact, I think the place where it really goes off the rails, I find the scientists annoying at times, but like the place where it really goes off the rails is the end, when it tries to start tying into Alien. You know, like when the alien and the giant facehugger show up, and then the alien is born. Like, if you're not an Alien fan, you're just like, what the
fuck? That's
what,
weird.
What is happening right now?
That's
yeah, so that's kind of my take on Prometheus, but I really enjoy it, and I actually think that it might be the most beautiful of them. Like, just the cinematography and all that is gorgeous. And you know, I felt like in some ways that movie, flaws and all, was sort of a return to form for Ridley Scott. Like, it was a strong showing from a craft standpoint, I thought, for filmmaking's craft standpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
But and because you mentioned Alien Covenant, I think we should talk about that too. And I have a lot to say. I have a lot. We don't have time for that. We can move on.
Well, I got to give my thoughts about Prometheus
first.
So I agree. I think we three like Prometheus more than any other random three nerds you could find. But it's like I like the atmosphere of it a lot. Like, the mood is like really cool and pretty consistent, and I love the production design. It's like, it's not like they're not truckers. Like, they're not truckers or soldiers in space. Like, these are, you know, ostensibly scientists on like a first voyage. So it's like, it's a fancier kind of, like, they have a nicer kind of home that they're sailing out. Like, I like that kind of contrast. And I like some of the set pieces are pretty cool. Like the auto surgery birth scene is, you know, crazy body horror, worthy of basically anything else in the series. Really cool, really gross, really scary.
She recovers fast from that.
Oh, yeah.
She does.
She's like running around, like
jumping hurdles
later.
And stuff with like her stomach sliced open. She's like, staple gun. Bam, 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 bam. I'm good.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. The problems that I have with the movie that come very close to ruining it for me are, the scientists are not very smart. They do dumb things. And the scientists also... And there's a lot, and I love Damon Lindelof, but there are certain things that Damon Lindelof does as a writer that recur often enough that they're kind of a signature thing that sort of drive me nuts. And one of them is kind of this compulsive need to insert Christian imagery and themes, Judeo-Christian, you know, kind of religious themes into the work.
Judeo-Christian.
Oh, judo Chris, I'm sorry. Forgive me. I forfeit my black belt in judo Christianity.
You're definitely a brown belt.
Yeah. So that drives me crazy. And then the main thing that drives me insane is something that they do in, for example, I know the first Alien versus Predator movie, which is I hate Ancient Aliens. Hate it.
Oh yeah,
I hate it. And they're just like, oh, all these aliens, they're all these pictograms from all these different cultures pointing to this cluster of stars, and it's just like, no, that takes me right out of any story, because it's stupid, it's dumb. And it's just like,
yeah,
oh,
also just to be point of clarification, like, I mean, Alien versus Predator does that like way worse. It's way more ham-handed.
Oh, yeah.
But in Prometheus, and I don't remember the sequence now, but if I'm not mistaken, they talk about that same, you know, the same like constellation or whatever that the cave painting is pointing to. And they talk about it being found in these various locations where it is impossible for them to all see the same constellation because they're in the top of the northern hemisphere and they're way down on the southern hemisphere and you don't have the same night sky. So unless our planet flipped over for a while, and that type of thing bothers me, but I like astronomy. So, but that like just takes me out of it, like right from the get-go.
Yeah. And it's more just for me, it's like, it's so dismissive of the efforts and accomplishments of ancient peoples. It's just like, well, how do these stupid Egyptians build these giant pyramids? Must have had alien assistance. It's like that kind of thinking just drives me nuts. And so to have that be a core science fiction concept in your story, I don't like that.
Yeah, and I think Prometheus is flawed because it sort of it sets itself up to answer these questions of our origin and purpose and all this sort of stuff, and it answers none of them. It really answers none of them, and not in a way that like made me more curious, and in a way that was just like, well, that was just a giant letdown. So I think it fails on sort of like a macro level, like up high, and it fails on a very specific level, just making bad decisions, like scientists making stupid decisions. But like, there's this sweet spot in the middle where I have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's weird. It's a very weird off kilter movie. Should we bring somebody up on stage? There's a question. I see a question.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see.
I have the older version of Bright, so I can't see anybody's name, but there's
Jeremy
a jumble
H.
of letters. Questions. Come on up.
Come on up, Jeremy. Hello. There you go. Jeremy, you're unmuted right now. If you're away from your keyboard, but okay. Well, anyway, Jeremy's question is, what do you think is better in an alien movie? An action movie like Aliens or a lore movie like Prometheus?
I think it's cool that they change each time. I think when I saw Aliens, I felt it immediately that it felt more like an action movie. And I thought that was definitely the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting like way to phrase that question because it sort of feels like an either or. And I like when they mash up the genres. But I am to this day, I am shocked that there is not a more sort of heir apparent to Aliens in the franchise itself. Like, why isn't there another? I mean, that one is so beloved. Like, why isn't there another action alien movie? I don't understand that.
The Rock should clearly
and Kevin Hart,
yeah.
which is how my son knows if he wants to see a movie. Does it have The Rock and Kevin Hart? Then he's in.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see Aliens mashed with Central Intelligence. That's
or Stuber. Yeah.
Or Stuber.
Aliens and Stuber mashed up.
But you know, I mean, interestingly, like, because we do try, I mean, sometimes we actually try to talk like sort of in that grand sort of franchise and franchise design standpoint. And from that standpoint, branching out and doing those other mashups where you hang on to the core of what you are, but you branch out, that tends to work. And Alien and Aliens lends itself to that kind of thing. The world is big enough and the situations are broad enough that you can really do that. And that's what broads the world out. So Prometheus, Alien Covenant, in my esteemed opinion, terrible sequel to Prometheus, and probably an even worse prequel to Alien. It fails on every level. But the thing that kills me is if you have seen the special edition of Aliens, where they actually spend 20 minutes on the colony with all the colonists, that 20 minutes of colonists is so much more engaging and interesting than the entire 2 hours of the colonists in Alien Covenant that I wish they would have just like taken that bit of Aliens and just put that in the theater. And I would have not felt ripped off.
Yeah. I think you could have actually just told that story. You could have told that LV-426, you could have told that story as a movie. And I think I would have been perfectly happy. You could have done something amazing with that. That would have worked.
Either of you heard, I was watching some YouTube videos on Prometheus. I don't have the special edition or anything, but they said it was initially cut from the film that they were going to mention the last time they saw those markings was 2000. Last time they came to Earth, actually, was 2000 years ago, around 2000 years ago. And it was Jesus was one of the aliens. And then, but then they cut that. You reminded me of what you just said, Skid. Did you know that that was going to be in the movie?
It doesn't surprise me in the least. But no, I did not know that. I'm glad I could be disgusted live on air. that offends everyone. That offends everybody. Like, it offends Christians. It offends science fiction fans. It's at least no stone unturned. Good job.
And I mean, that's everybody right there. That's Christians and science fiction fans.
Hey, there's two kinds of people in this world.
Two kinds of people. That's it. What else we got?
Yeah, Claire has a good question.
Let's bring Claire up.
Yeah, I'll ask the question and then we'll bring her up.
She's nervous. Okay.
Which alien movie do you think makes the best political statement or gives the starkest comment on our potential future as humankind?
Man, I mean, I think Resurrection is pretty dark, but I think it doesn't finish on quite as much of a hopeless note as I just rewatched it, and I don't think I'd seen it since I was in the theater.
Why did you jump to Resurrection? I'm curious. I have not seen that one as recently as you, but like why go there in terms of a political statement or about our future? What is it about Resurrection that
I think Resurrection is the first one where it is explicitly political entities that are kind of driving this kind of push to exploit the xenomorphs. Whereas in like every other, I think almost every other one, it's either private industry, private enterprise or like a corporate enterprise is doing it. Whereas in it is the military like trying to exploit these things, and then so and it is just it's a very, I don't like that movie. I really don't.
I don't either.
You don't, right? What Tom, tell us why you don't like that movie.
I was saying it when we talked earlier. I barely even remember it. I watched it a few weeks ago and I just remember it just being horrible and like silly.
Yeah.
But Michael Wincott's voice is so raspy. What's not to like?
He has a cool, that's the one thing that I did remember from watching it originally in the theater. Was like, man, that guy's voice is great. That guy's awesome.
And I love Winona
Juilliard
Ryder.
Grad, by the way, Juilliard grad. Oh yeah. And
not in
Winona
that movie,
Ryder.
But I love her in almost everything she's in. I didn't even know she was in that movie.
I forgot she was
probably
in it too.
A low point for her. Like she was huge till the early 90s. That was 97. That was like when she was shoplifting.
That's right.
And then Stranger Things and everything.
She went from shoplifting all of our hearts to actual shoplifting.
It's to Star Trek.
Right. Which, she was in Star Trek?
She was in the Star Trek 11. Yeah.
I didn't even know that either.
The reboot one. She's Spock's mom.
Right. That's right.
I can't believe we're in business together. You guys
No, you're right. I was thinking the original. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It is okay. Well, I have a quick Winona Ryder story.
Let's hear it.
All right, do it.
So my friend Amy from college, one summer, they were shooting The Crucible up in Massachusetts, where we were all going to school, and she got a landed a part in the movie, and she was one of the girls like in the town that follows Winona Ryder around and like accuses people of being a witch. She's great. If you watch the movie, she's the one in the red dress. She came back the next semester and she was telling us all about there was this huge kind of argument with the producers and her representation because they wanted to like dirty her up to like make her look like she's been having a rough time and like make her look more period appropriate and everything. They want to put grime on her and like dirt in her fingernails. And her representation is like one of the terms of her deal at the time was that Winona Ryder could never appear on screen as anything other than beautiful, perfect, pristine Winona Ryder. So the production people and her representation are having this argument. And Amy is a pretty acerbic sense of humor. And she just busts out laughing because she thinks it's hilarious. And Winona Ryder like turned to her and said, "It's not funny, Amy." And that's the whole story. That's it. I wow. just love picturing Winona Ryder says, "It's not funny, Amy." I could just totally see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Amy, I'd like to think there's more to that. Like she found $20 or she had in a fight with Winona Ryder. I don't know. I feel like there's more there.
It could
also
be.
Also, I'm not even sure this is true because we all know that the woman in the red dress was written into the Matrix. And so I think this whole thing is conjecture.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah. I think your friend Amy doesn't exist. Amy, if you're listening, I'm sorry. You're not. Okay. Here.
I'm sorry. God, I'll have to let her know. I'll have to Facebook message her.
And just so you know, I'm not being paid by Warner Brothers, but there's a new Matrix movie coming out. I don't know if you've heard about that.
That's a franchise we should do.
Absolutely.
The new movie's coming out and it looks awesome.
Yeah, we should.
But yeah, anyway, Resurrection, I hate it. There, it's Jean-Pierre Jeunet was the director, and I think he was coming off of City of Lost Children,
which is cool.
Which is a good movie, but it has like this weird kind of European French fairy tale aesthetic to it that, when grafted onto the Aliens franchise, is very upsetting to me. He also cast a lot of people that he liked to work with, like Ron Perlman, who's actually awesome, and who's the French actor plays the character in the
wheelchair. I forget his name.
I can't remember the actor's name, but yeah. So he was in City of Lost Children, and the script was written by Joss Whedon, and there was a lot of Firefly in that movie too. But it doesn't work. It's too gross. It's too weird. I think they take the mother kind of theme a little too far. They get a little too graphic with it for my taste. And I think that Clone Ripley is really where the movie... I think that's the biggest misstep of the movie.
Because they just cast someone else?
Well, I just think it's... She's not Ripley. They're trying to like draw these connections to her, but she's so different. She's basically an unrecognizable character at that point who has some of the same memories. And it's like, yeah, I would like almost prefer that that character just not be in the movie at all, because like everything that makes Aliens work with Ripley in it, all those qualities that Ripley has, just she doesn't have in this movie. It just doesn't work the same way, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see what that script would look like if the decision had been made not to clone Ripley and put her, like, just abandon that completely. One of the things though that I like about that is that it doesn't just use cloning Ripley as an excuse to have Ripley back even though she was dead. Like, the fact that she is like demonstrably different and intentionally different, and that Sigourney Weaver plays her differently, which I think is super cool. I actually like that. I don't really love the end product, but I like a lot of the thinking behind how they executed it.
I get it too. I get it. Yeah. I love the basketball stuff. I'm a huge hoops fan. That's cool. She palms a basketball. That's awesome.
But. Yeah. It's interesting that you went to Resurrection. I went to Alien 3. which also has some religious overtones. It has, you know, it speaks a lot to sort of, you know, there's some stuff that I think relates interestingly to what we've got going on, you know, in society today with some misinformation and rumor control and like all this kind of stuff. And ultimately, like, you know, whatever the Fury, I forget what the number is, but the planet Fury 953 or whatever it is, it's like, it just feels like this sort of dystopian future it just feels like that's where we're headed. We all just belong. We're all turning the world, the Earth, into a prison planet.
Yeah. I feel like.
But there really is. There's a lot of stuff going on. You know, especially between Ripley and the doctor's name I'm blanking on now, who's great. Oh,
Charles Dance.
Charles Dance. Yeah. Who I was amazing, just watching Charles the other Dance. Night. My son and I decided to watch probably his best performance and
Golden Child,
The Last Action Hero.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. We were checking that, that one too. Out. But
underrated,
yeah,
I mean, Charles classic.
Charles Dance is great. And I think their relationship, like there's like the redemptive quality. I think that one speaks to a lot of like what, I don't know. And it's bizarre because for a Fincher film, I actually feel like there's hope despite the fact that it's completely bleak and all that. But I don't know. Alien 3 is the one that sits like with me the longest. And I find myself when I watch it, find myself thinking about it for about a week.
Yeah, I think it's might. It, on some level, I think it might be the best world building effort in the series. I love like the setting that they created for the story, even if the movie kind of falls short in some areas. I think I love the society that the prisoners have crafted for that. Like, there's a lot of layers and a lot of depth there, right. You know. The performances are great. Like, I love, you know, the actor
Charles Dutton. Is great.
Love, yeah, Charles S. Dutton. Amazing. Yeah, that's pretty fantastic. And yeah, and there is
he gives the best speech in any of those movies, I think.
Yeah.
His like rousing speech at the end about, you know, are you gonna die standing up or on your fucking knees is like, it's great. Like, I want to go fight an alien and lose.
Yeah, and it's cool. I like Charles Dutton is just cool. Like, he has such an interesting life story. Like, he killed a guy in Baltimore. It's just like,
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was like a manslaughter, and I think it was in self defense or something. But he ended up going to prison. So I guess it wasn't self defense, but yeah, he was in prison for a while, and he kind of like dedicated himself to turning his life around and like got into acting like when he got out and everything. Just really, really, like, he came from like nothing and like he really kind of really, really interesting, really cool stuff.
That's why I like coming to these sessions. I learn tidbits. They're so neat. I probably shouldn't refer to somebody's life story as a tidbit, but
as a murder as a tidbit. That's a fun tidbit. Killed a guy.
Oh, let's talk about that some more.
I'll have something to talk about if I ever meet him.
Yeah. Skidbits. That's what we're getting.
Skidbits. There we go. Thank you, Jonathan. We have a new coined copyrighted catchphrase. Nobody else use it.
Yeah. You know what? The entire time I've known you, I've never wanted to see, hear, or touch skidbits.
That's right. Well, now it's safe.
Yeah, now promote, we can share them with the world.
Yeah,
which is the way that skidbits should be.
Yeah. Everyone can see, hear, and touch them.
Father, they're best enjoyed publicly. what else we got?
Anyone else have any more questions, or if so, write them up, and I'll ask you guys a question.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of ethics exist in a Weyland-Yutani corporate world?
Not many. Of the same ethics that enjoy in our capitalist society, I would say. Yeah, there's not a lot of good there. You know, And Weyland Yutani is kind of interesting because it gets played differently from movie to movie. Like in the first movie, it's not, you know, they're interested in getting the alien back. Obviously, they put that above the crew. In Aliens, it's the same sort of thing. But it's played differently in Prometheus. You know, they're, yeah, I don't know. He's so creepy in Prometheus, but yeah, in terms of ethics, I think there's just not any ethics.
Yeah.
In the corporations.
From their side, there's none.
I do like seeing kind of the roots of that ruthlessness in Prometheus with, wait, what's his first name? In the Weyland?
I can't remember.
But yeah, like I love seeing that, like he planted like all the, like everything that happens in, you know, as far as like the corporate fuckery, it can be traced back to his personal kind of lack of morality, which is pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the whole thing is a pretty scathing indictment of corporate interests above human interests. It's pretty cool. Okay. So, all right. We have two things here. Okay. So Claire again asks, which alien video game do you most recommend? Andy's famously a huge video game fan. Why don't you answer this one, buddy?
It's hands down the original Aliens arcade game.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow.
Where you're just given the pulse rifle and you're like on a, you're on a, like a Jeep and you just get to shoot at aliens.
I forgot about that.
Or you're not in the Jeep and you get to walk around with a pulse rifle and shoot at aliens. And sometimes, here, I'll see if I can back up far enough to demonstrate, because you can shoot at them like this, or you can duck down and you shoot like 2 feet lower.
Wow.
It's great. It's side scrolling. It's fantastic. And that is the peak of video game technology. Despite the fact that I have written video games, they've never gotten better than Aliens and the original 4-person player Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, that was a great game too.
Yeah.
Well,
I completely forgot that the arcade game existed.
I literally played that like 3 weeks ago.
How?
Downstairs. I've got it.
Oh.
I don't have the stand up arcade. I've got a, you know,
emulator.
I've got a, you know, illegal simulator.
There you go.
All of those games are the same game though, right? The Simpsons, Ninja Turtles,
yeah.
Alien, yep. Streets,
X-Men.
Of Rage.
I was also playing the X-Men where you're Colossus, Nightcrawler, Wolverine.
Yeah. River City,
yeah,
Rampage, the Scott Pilgrim, short lived PS3 downloadable game. I think for me, it's funny because like almost every attempt at making a video game in this universe has failed, sometimes spectacularly, like with Colonial Marines. It's a terrible game. And the only one that I can think of that was actually successful was Alien Isolation. And there was a Colonial Marines game in like a earlier generation, like around Dreamcast, I think, or PlayStation 1 or 2, that was pretty okay. But Alien Isolation works, and that, like, the premise of that is that you are, you're Ripley's daughter, right? You're Ripley's daughter, and you are trapped alone on a space station being hunted by a xenomorph. And the mechanics of it, the atmosphere of it is phenomenal. Like it really kind of manages to capture that magic really that Alien had, and that really none of them have either attempted to kind of capture or been able to capture since. So honestly, I think Alien Isolation, and I can't play it, like I say, because it scares me too much. I've watched Grant play it, and it's phenomenal. And it might be the best Alien product since Aliens, I think. So,
wow, that's a bold statement.
Good question. Claire agrees.
And Jonathan says he has a story about a close encounter with the Queen Alien.
Let's hear from Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan, entertain us, please.
Yeah.
All right, you guys can hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey guys. FYI, I want royalties for Skid Bits.
All right.
I'm sorry. I have 100% proprietary. It's such a murky legal area that I don't. We're going to be tied up in court proceedings for possibly generations. I don't know if you're mentally, financially prepared to do that. I certainly am. So you might as well just give up now.
That's I'll back off. All right. Yeah. No. So I grew up in the UK, and I think I was maybe 9 or 10, and there was an article in the local paper about them finding some old aliens props in a warehouse somewhere, and that they're going to put on display. Mm-hmm. And so I just imagine like a middle-aged security guard going to like some warehouse somewhere with a flashlight, opening the door and just like finding the queen alien in a corner. Yeah, but it was cool because the way they did it, it was like, oh yeah, they found these props, you know, lost props from years ago. But yeah, we went and they had this whole cool setup with all the pulse rifles and the armor, and they had the queen alien in the corner, full size, like 25 feet. I don't know if it was the actual mechanical one that they used in the movie, but it was definitely a life-size model. Wow. And they had this area set up that looked like part of Hadley's Hope, with, you know, all the metal grating and everything. And they had a door at the end of it, a big blast door, and there was a little window. If you peeked in, it was all foggy and misty, and a guy in an alien suit would come at the door and
oh my god! Wow, that's so cool.
It was
that's
really awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Wow.
It was
awesome. Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Thank you, John.
Oh yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah,
that's a very good story.
Yeah, and thanks for coming tonight too. Appreciate it.
Yes, everybody. Yes, yeah. Thank you, everybody, for showing up. We appreciate it. Okay, so,
on my version of this, I can't see names, but somebody has the director question. Looks
yeah. Jeremy H. What living Jeremy director H. that isn't Ridley Scott do you think has the chops to make a new entry in the franchise?
Good question.
So that's a tricky question for me, because what I think works really well about the first three Alien movies, and they were trying to continue with the fourth one, although that one didn't work as well, is that they got really young at the time, young new directors that were kind of doing new things. And the Alien franchise now is sort of known, and like your instinct is to go for somebody big, which you can probably potentially get because it is this giant franchise, right?
Yeah, they were pulling like talent from Roger Corman, like,
right? But
aliens.
I love the idea of and I don't have an idea of who that is, like, just off the top of my head, but I love the idea of doing that search and getting somebody new. But in terms of established directors, I got a couple of ideas. I was not gonna go David Lynch, but
I love that idea, Claire. That is a phenomenal idea.
But I thought Danny Boyle would be really interesting.
Mm. Mm.
You know, 28 Days Later, Slumdog Millionaire, like he's a and the science fiction movie he did with Captain America is quite good too. Sunshine.
Oh yeah.
It's quite good. I mean, he's done remarkable work. I think he'd be great. Love to see what he would do with it. I also think that, and this is more in your sort of David Fincher vein, Darren Aronofsky would turn in something really bizarre and interesting.
Ooh, yeah.
I'd be curious where he's going to take it. And then I also thought, and this one is much more out of the box, but I actually thought that Mark Forster could potentially do something interesting. And I love the movie Finding Neverland. That he made. He made World War Z, which I did not love, but showed, you know, technical skill within sort of the horror genre. You know, even movies like The Kite Runner and Monster's Ball. So he's done this, like he's run that gamut, but it's really kind of Finding Neverland that I think would be interesting. And it, like you were saying, the reason I think I hit on him is because what you were saying earlier, Skid, about the sort of fairy tale-ish quality that Resurrection sort of attempted to have. Mm-hmm. I think an approach more like a Finding Neverland or something like that, the aesthetic that he could bring would be potentially very interesting. Yeah, so those are sort of three kind of bigger, more established directors. You know, Gore Verbinski, I think, could be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But those were the ones that kind of came to mind for me. But I don't have, having not watched any new movies in 2 years, I don't really have a keen eye for the young directors that maybe I once did. But yeah, those are kind of the ones that I went to. I don't know if they're good choices or not, but.
Okay. What about you, Tom?
Mine, he would be my answer for probably a quarter of all movies, but this one, I do think it makes sense. It's not just 'cause I love him, and he doesn't use CGI much at all. Mm-hmm. So it would be awesome to see an Alien movie. It would almost be made like the way it was in the 70s. And that would be with Quentin Tarantino. And I think he would do an amazing job.
It'd be different.
Wow. Yes. I mean, there's been the rumored
Star Trek
movie, which I still really want to see.
Me too.
I really want to see that, but oh man.
I think that would be a really cool, he's going to do one more movie, he says. That'd be cool if he did one more movie he wrote and directed of his own characters and then signed a deal with Netflix. This would never happen.
Yeah.
Signed a deal with Netflix and does like five properties in 5 years.
Yeah. Alien Grindhouse double feature. Yeah. Him and Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that idea. Do you think, side note here, do you think Quentin Tarantino is actually going to stop at 10 movies, or do you think he's not going to be able to help himself?
I don't know. When his book came out, the Once a Time in Hollywood, the book came out like 6 months ago. I watched some of the interviews he did promoting it. He said he still has no idea what the 10th movie is going to be. So I feel like we're at least 3 or 4 years away from that existing then.
Are you counting Kill Bill as one or two movies?
One.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, because it's part one and part two.
Yeah, and Four Rooms doesn't count towards any of them because he only did a quarter of the movie.
Right.
Does True Romance count if he only wrote it?
No. Yeah, that doesn't count.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, science fiction is the one genre that he hasn't really tackled.
Or anything in the future.
Yeah. Like nothing like set in the future. He's done stuff set in the past. No sci-fi. And I know he likes it. And yeah, I'd love to see Star Trek. But yeah, Aliens would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
Thank you. It'd be great. I think for me, my answer for would the like Tom, I have an answer for that would be the same for any movie that you suggested would be Denis Villeneuve.
That was my second choice.
I almost started with that, but it was like, no, they'll get it.
I think
we have brought him up more than any other director like on the show now. We're clearly enamored with him.
Yeah. And I want to say we liked him before he was cool. Like now he's like hit mainstream, I think, with Dune. And I think it's like, just everybody remember, like we liked him before. We liked him back with Prisoners, all that stuff. So
yeah, The Enemy,
Enemy. Yeah.
He's ours. Creepy.
Yeah. Oh, actually, you know, have you guys seen Polytechnique? Have you seen that movie that he did?
No,
I've
not seen that one.
I just watched it a few weeks ago, and it was, I think he did it in like 98 or something. And it's reminded me, it's a little like Elephant. It was like inspired by the true story of this Canadian kind of mass shooter who like attacked a bunch of women basically at Polytechnic University in Quebec. And it's still really early. It's like a really early Villeneuve, but it's like all the like technique and stuff is like, you can see it there. And it's terrifying and really, really good movie. But yeah, I think that everything that he does well would lend itself incredibly well to a really tense. I mean, I think as far as like another attempt to really blend action and horror to really go for it. I mean, I think he'd be perfect for that. Other than him, I think Mike Lee, I'm just a big Mike Lee fan. So I would love to see it like set in like 1890s London and a lot of really heartfelt confessions over tea and then aliens show up. I think it's a winning, another winning combination.
You know, one of the directors I think Hollywood would be like jumping at, like I could see Warner Brothers or well, Fox, Fox, which is now Disney, never mind, going after like, it, like Del Toro so seems like the most like obvious choice for like Hollywood. I wouldn't be that excited about it though, honestly, but I feel like that's what Hollywood would want.
Yeah, I think that like that's all too on the nose, I think, to get my motor running. But yeah, I agree. Danny Trejo is one of the Space Marines. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Do it, make it happen before it's too late.
And Samuel L.
Oh my god. He's great in Predators.
Interesting.
Oh, Predators?
I said it. He is in Predators. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
As is Topher Grace. They make a great combo. You wouldn't think.
Wow.
And editing, right.
Editing savant, Topher Grace. Doc, do you want to jump up on stage and ask your question here?
Okay. All right, let's do it.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello, Doc. Yes.
Awesome. So my question was basically, if you guys were, you know, pitching the next Alien film, whether that's, you know, a prequel or something a little bit more far, you know, far off from the main franchise, or it was Alien 5, what would you be wanting it to be? Would it be more of a horror-focused one, like the original Alien, or would you want something a bit more action-forward, like Aliens, or something completely different?
Well, Doc, first of all, I'm just curious what's on the bookshelf behind you, because like I'm fascinated by what do we got?
Mostly RPG books. Call of Cthulhu. Okay. I actually have the Alien RPG on my shelf as well.
That's a great game.
It's so good.
It's great, right?
It is. It's
great. Modiphius, awesome. They're putting out the best stuff in the industry right now.
They are, yeah.
All right. Thank you for clarifying. Well, I'm curious. Do you have your own sort of take on this, Doc? Like,
you know, I love the original Alien. It is my favorite of the series. But I kind of feel like we could really use something a bit more action-focused again. We really haven't gotten anything since Aliens. Like, you know, there's been some big action sequences, especially near the end of each film. But we haven't gotten that, you know, knockdown, drag out, almost, you know, for lack of a better term, or a film to combine it with, but like the original Predator, where we have, it's horror, it's scary, but you have badasses as the, you know, as your protagonist, and they can, and they do fight back.
Right. And that's a movie where it's interesting because it starts out as an action movie and it turns into a horror movie.
Right.
Kind of like, what is the one that Tarantino's in?
Dusk
Till Dawn. Like, kind of like
that. Yeah.
I love that.
Two totally different movies. Yeah.
I love movies that like change genres like halfway through. It's like, yeah.
Also, Aliens and Predator are two of the most quotable movies ever.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime somebody brings up Predator, I'm just like, I immediately go to, what's the matter, Dylan? The CIA got to pushing too many pencils. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I would love another movie as good as Aliens and in that genre. But really, has anybody done an action movie as well as Cameron since Cameron? I'm not even sure Cameron has done an action movie as well as Cameron since Aliens and T2. True Lies is pretty fun, but
like True Lies conventions and stuff. People aren't going to conventions dressed as True Lies.
I mean, I do, but whatever.
Well, apart from you, I meant.
Right. I'd like to, I definitely would enjoy that. I think the key for me is I just want it to be smart again.
Yeah.
Alien and Aliens and Alien 3 are smart movies. They are also, you know, well-made horror and action and whatnot. I just don't want to go to more Alien movies where I'm like, that person is dumb. And I feel like every Alien movie since Alien 3, I have felt that way. I'm trying to think if there's an exception to that. And I don't think there is. And also I think I would definitely, I don't need an Alien prequel, right? Like I've never wanted one. Prometheus, I think, would have been better not tied to the Alien franchise. you know. So I would want to do something forward. I would probably just forget resurrection and happen. Like no need to, I don't think there's any need to reference resurrection, right? But yeah, I think I would want to do something. Yeah, just something that moves the franchise forward. There was, you know, there's the interesting, like, the thing about the wooden planet. Have you guys read about that? What was going to be Alien 3, the William Gibson?
The William Gibson script. Have you read that script?
A long, long time ago, I read it. Yeah, it was circulating on the internet, you know, back when the internet had 4 websites. And I read it back then. But yeah, I do think it needs an injection, right? It seems like they keep trying to do Alien as horror, and it's just not tracking anymore. And part of it's, I just don't, part of it's what I was saying. Like, I don't think they're very intelligent anymore. And I think, you know, it's one of those things, right? Like, you have directors like Michael Bay that make the dumbest movies ever, and they make $1 billion. And so Hollywood's like, people don't want smart stuff. But the movies that endure and really spawn real franchises that last, like an Alien. Like, Aliens had a lot of bad movies and it still survived, right? We've been recording, foreshadowing. We've been recording Die Hard lately. And like, wow, those are some shit movies, folks.
They get really bad, spoiler alerts. They get very stupid.
But that one movie is so good, right? That, you know, we'll feed off of that one movie. We'll consume a whole bunch of bad stuff. So I think it needs to find its feet. I think it should go, you know, forward in the future or tangentially or whatever. It doesn't really matter. It just needs to move. No more navel gazing. I don't care how they got here. But the story needs to be coherent. And I think that's right, the way that we go. I think they should branch out from horror. They should merge the horror with something else again, because I think that does make it a lot more interesting. Maybe a musical?
Alien musical.
On that note branching out from horror, do you think that, like, maybe the Xenomorph as a primary villain is just a little bit played out, in that it was terrifying in the first film. It was awesome seeing them fight against it in 2 and 3. But at a certain point, the Xenomorph is the Xenomorph. And even if we want to turn him into the dogs or the queen or whatever, it's still just the Xenomorph. And it's never going to be as scary as it was in the first Alien film.
Yeah, I think they kind of... The problem with a sequel is that you have to expand and escalate whatever the threat is. And I think they did a great job with that from Alien to Aliens, introducing, well, first of all, just there's more than one of them. Like, that's horrible. And the queen. Mm-hmm. And that reveal in the last, 30 minutes of the movie is fantastic. And it's kind of, yeah, you're right. Like, it's kind of hard to go from there. Like, at a certain point, you reach some diminishing returns. So
I do think there might be something interesting with, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, go ahead.
If you've ever read Ender's Game and the sequel Speaker for the Dead, and I have some issues with that author, but I've met him. We've talked about those issues.
He did Iron Man for you?
Ultimate Iron Man, not for me, for Nick. Yeah.
Oh, if Nick did that, right. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, but those books are great. And I think there could be something really interesting, like doing sort of, you know, not just like take Ender's Game and swap those aliens out for these aliens, but there's something to, like, you know, there's something about the child in danger, but the child is also really super smart, like in, like, Newt and Aliens. Like, there are some things that you can pick up from what's worked before that I think you could find a new path. And maybe the alien doesn't have to be the villain. Like, I don't want to do the X-Men thing where all the villains become heroes, but like, but it could be one of the threats, or, you know, treated more like an invasive species, like here. Like, I mean, I live in an area that used to be full of ash trees. It's why Louisville Slugger is right down the road for me that makes the bats. But these very monstrous weevils have come through, and they are killing all the ash trees in North America. Treating them like an invasive species like that, and like taking just like, it's just a different take on how you approach them and how you deal with them, I think could make them scary again, because just the take itself could make them more fearsome. And maybe they're not just killing humans, but they're killing some other natural resource on some colony out there that needs it. I mean, I think, you could make that about the desperation, like how are we going to survive? It becomes more of a survival story than it is horror and action, or, I don't know. That may be totally wrongheaded. I'm just going to off the cuff here, but
I like your idea of having the aliens come to Earth and destroy the baseball bat industry in Kentucky. That works on its face. What about Tom? What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't thought too much about this one, but it could work where the xenomorphs, it's not talked about much, like how they, like if they were to evolve, how much do they communicate with each other? Can they speak? Do they have telepathy to each other?
Yeah. Yeah. They seem to they definitely have some kind of communication, like in Resurrection, like they're mm-hmm. talking to each other somehow. Yeah. They get the two of them, like the one convinces them to kill it to make it bleed escape, yeah.
I forgot about that.
I would do on the podcast, I mentioned this, it would be very similar to what I mentioned with Jurassic Park. The movie would start, it would be a straight up horror movie. Humans have to have some sort of mission. These aliens are in the way, and it would have to be very dramatic and sad. We'd be really heartbroken to see the main character would die. And then the movie starts over, but it's from the alien point of view. And then in the second viewing, you're actually rooting for the aliens and cheering them on. It would be like a grindhouse pick where you'd be like, yeah. And then, cause you'd realize how unethical and how the humans were more messed up and messing up their world.
Yeah, I like that too.
I'd also like to go back and say I thought of another director I'd really like to see tackle Alien.
Okay.
I'd like to see Drew Goddard tackle Alien.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. A little bit of humor. Yeah, no, that's yeah. great.
Also, I'm on this older version of the app, and someone, I can see him. Somebody.
Thank you, Doc. Me, thank you. But great question, Doc.
Yeah, thank you, Doc.
Who's local to me? Who is that?
Marlin.
Oh, who's that?
Marlin said Andy.
Marlin. Yes, Marlin. Marlin's in Kentucky as well. Awesome. You guys can hang out.
I'm glad to see you also survived.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you. That's very, very, very lucky, both of you. And somebody, I can't see the name either, but somebody personally, I want to see an alien movie, but it's in the slums of a city like Blade Runner 2020, a cyberpunk alien movie. Who is that? Can you, Tom?
Jeremy H.
Jeremy. That's awesome, too. Dope. Like, an alien meets Blade Runner meets Predator 2.
But let's funnel this through Keanu Reeves' Johnny Mnemonic. And then I think
that's. Oh, there. Okay. Now you have you've sold me. Now I'm ready to invest $180 million of studio money in our idea.
I watched the first 10 minutes of Johnny Mnemonic about 4 weeks ago, and it hurt. That movie is bad. I didn't even get to the talking dolphin part. It was rough. Rough
I love
movie.
The early internet concepts of the internet and film. I just watched Hackers for the first time. That's a good movie, but it has some very funny ideas about how computers work.
So there's another person whose name I can't read that says they tried the Predator Alien combo. I can't read the names.
That's Kevin.
I'm sorry, I don't have your name. Kevin. If you're up for it, I think you should come on and tell us who does the alien team up with next? Like, who are we pairing the alien up with, if not the Predator? What you got?
Okay, that looks you're like
the,
a sense.
You're in the hot seat.
Yeah. All right, Kevin.
Can you unmute yourself, Kevin?
There we go.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget what movie that was, but didn't they have like the alien like come out of the Predator and then they had to fight that, which was it was horrible, but I mean that was the I think that was their next try in the up the ante in the the scariness and stuff like that.
Did they face hug a predator in one of the Alien versus Predator movies?
Yeah, I said before
we got on here, I mentioned that I watched both of those like 3 months ago, and I still they were purged like from my brain.
Yeah, I think they did, but it was they're bad. But I think that was the next push to make it the unstoppable being, and obviously it was a unstoppable movie.
Didn't work for the movie itself, but yeah, I like the concepts.
But it just didn't work in the movie. The movie was just bad, but I don't know what else they can merge an alien.
I want to see the aliens in an underworld movie. That's what I want to see. So I want to see werewolves, vampires,
and aliens.
Aliens and Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And I'm sold.
Yeah.
You have my attention now.
Now, when you
throw that trailer out there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, that's a good. Well, that's good. Okay, we have some good ideas here. Aliens versus Superman. Just get super degenerate. Okay.
I read that comic. There's a real comic. There's an alien.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, there's an Aliens versus Superman comic.
Like
2002. Okay. Yeah, Aliens versus Mars Attacks is pretty great. That's pretty funny.
That would be cool. I like that. That's good.
And there's also an Aliens versus Predator versus Terminator comic that came out. So we've seen that one also.
Well, that was what I was thinking. Is like aliens in the adult John Connor Terminator Earth.
Like the dystopian future Earth.
Yeah. Because I like the idea, kind of like what you were saying, of that could be like a way to go with it, is Alien, rather than being the primary antagonist, being sort of a natural hazard that can be dangerous to anybody that comes into contact with it. And the primary focus, the primary struggle being between two other parties. So, I mean, that would be a great kind of arena.
Right.
It
would be interesting if the humans start to win against the machines, and the machines know that there is these eggs buried.
Yeah, they weaponize the
machines. They weaponize, like Weyland Yutani, they weaponize the alien. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
I would be into that. I think I'm against crossover movies for the most part, but I would go. It'd be. Would you guys be more excited if it was Terminator 7 and this just happens 3/4 into the movie?
Oh, now that I would love.
Yeah, like where it's not mentioned, the name Alien.
They never mention it, and then I would lose my shit.
That reminds me of, so for those of you that don't know, which is probably none of the nerds here, with Fox being bought by Disney, now one of the questions is, how are you going to bring Fantastic Four and X-Men into the Marvel Universe? So this was my theory. This is how I would start introducing mutants. Is I would finally give the Hulk his own movie again, played by I'm blanking on his name.
Eric Bana.
No, not that Hulk.
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo.
Who I think is fantastic.
Lou Ferrigno.
Yes. Thank you.
Bring him all back.
Anyway, and absolutely keep it silent. Never put it in a trailer, anything, until after the movie is premiered. But the Hulk goes into the woods, just like Hulk 181, and he winds up coming in contact with Wolverine, and they have a big ass fight at the end of it, and your crowd goes crazy. And that's how you introduce the mutants. You introduce them in a Hulk movie the way that you did in the comics. You got the connection to the history of the comics. It'd be great. And then that opens up the door for the Marvel Universe to explore what the heck was that? Like, that was a mutant. And then it opens up the door, and then you find out there is this sort of underground mutant culture, and that can lead you to the X-Men eventually, but you seed it, you build it slowly. That's my
I love that.
Too.
Yeah.
With all new
I
people
should,
for the X-Men.
I should actors. Yeah, all new actors. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if that was I don't know if that was my idea or my brother Craig's idea. My brother Craig, by the way, listened to our episode recently where I made fun of him and my other brother Arnie for seeing episode 1 Star Wars so many times.
There was something wrong with them, right? That's what they thought.
Yeah, it couldn't
have been something wrong with the movie.
Yeah, so I feel like I should give him some props. That was a conversation between the two of us. We kind of came up with that together. Anyway, there.
Nice.
Okay. I've done that. There, I've done you a solid, Craig. There you go.
Man, okay, I love that idea. I love that idea. That makes me think of the Mark Miller's 1985 too a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's been a long time since I read that.
Yeah, I haven't read that. Like Mark Miller.
Oh. The
Miller World, Mark Miller?
Yeah, yeah. You should read it, actually, Tom.
It's a Marvel comic, yeah.
Yeah, it's a blast. It's like it's short, it's a cool concept. And has anyone in the chat read it? I think it's like one of my favorite, like it's like a beach read comic. It's just like real, it's quick and like it's really, really fun and cool.
Doc Robotnik says Alien versus Donald Duck, and that just made me think my favorite Marvel character is Howard the Duck.
Mine too.
It was awesome.
I love Howard. I didn't know that. I can't believe we're Howard the Duck buddies. That's fucking awesome.
I would definitely see Alien v. Howard.
Movie. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I saw Howard the Duck at a special screening. In Denver when it was 83 that came out?
Something around there. Yeah.
The original? Or 84?
First Marvel movie I ever saw.
Yeah, that is the first Marvel movie, right?
And none since has compared to it.
No. And yeah, I saw it. It was a special sneak preview. And I was so excited. And I loved that movie so much. And I was so jazzed. I was 11 years old. And I come out of the theater. And I was on top of the world. And an older kid was walking out next to me. And he was like, that was the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. And it was the first time that I realized that movies could be bad. And also that I could be wrong about a movie. But man, I still love that movie. I love the old Gerber, Howard the Duck stuff. Yeah.
I was a huge Howard the Duck fan as a kid. And I didn't really understand a lot of sort of the social commentary and satire that was going on in the book. I just really loved it. And when that movie came out, it came out I think 2 days before my birthday. And my family and I were on vacation. We were in Canada at the time. And my parents on my birthday, they wanted to take us to a botanical garden. And I was like, it's my birthday and I want to see Howard the Duck. It's going to be awesome. And you're all going to thank me for it. And I got really, really upset. Really upset, as only a child dying to see Howard the Duck movie can get. And my two older brothers took up the cause, and they went to my parents and they were like, look, I mean, it's the guy's birthday. We should go see the movie. We can do other stuff, but we should go see the movie. It's his birthday. Be reasonable. So eventually they won the argument. We went to the botanical gardens first, and I'm sure I was on tip-top behavior and I was awesome the whole time while we were there. And then we went to see the movie, and similar to you, Skid, that was the first movie I ever got out of, and summarily apologized for forcing us all to go see it. Recently, I told that story to my own kids, and my brother for my birthday recently gave me a DVD copy of that, as a gang.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool.
And so I was like, kids, we gotta watch Howard the Duck. And we sat down. I haven't watched it in 35 years or whatever. So we sat down and started watching it. Very inappropriate on top of being terrible.
Oh yeah.
Definitely the opening scenes. Yeah. The first sequence. Yeah. There's the most inappropriate.
Oh yeah. I didn't notice my mom cringing from crippling embarrassment in the movie theater.
Yeah. And then my kids are kind of turn and look over at me and they're like,
Duck have nipples?
Yeah, they just sort of scooting away from me. And I'm like, this is great. This is great. It's not great.
Why is she trying to seduce that duck?
She does seduce the duck.
Why is Leah Thompson trying to have sex with that waterfowl?
But big Leah Thompson fan when I was little. I've got some friends that have met her, and they say she is delightful.
I believe it completely. Yeah. I even watched Caroline in the City when it was on. That's how big a Leah Thompson fan I was.
You're a pretty big fan.
Show sucked.
My movie that I still like it. I haven't seen it in 15 years, but I don't know if I know anyone else who likes it, but Monkey Bone. I loved it. I was telling all my friends
Brendan
about
Fraser.
It. They're like, that movie sucks. I was probably 15, 16 when that came out. And I thought I had found the next cool movie for everyone, but no.
I think it was.
That's a good crossover too. Monkey Bone, Alien crossover.
Oh, no.
Potentially Flubber also.
I got
never
it.
Saw Flubber.
Roger Rabbit meets Alien.
Oh, that's great.
Nailed it.
Roger Rabbit, that's a solid winner.
Does the sauce melt the aliens as well? Is the sauce like alien blood to aliens? Or are the cartoons just getting maybe melted that's, by sauce and alien blood? Or is the sauce the alien blood?
That's what I was going to say. From? That's where they get the sauce, is it's alien blood. I don't know. I'll leave it up to the writers.
Lloyd and some more movies. Yeah, somebody will come up with something.
Yeah. That is a good movie.
I do like the idea of aliens versus some sort of like we were talking about Terminator and we're kind of talking about some stuff, but like aliens versus robots could be interesting because the way that they kill humans doesn't work. There'd have to be more use of the blood to like melt through the circuitry and stuff like that. Like that could be kind of I think as a writer and as a director, you'd have to get more clever, which is what we need. I think that creators often, maybe not all of them, but often create better when they have obstacles, like when they're forced to deal with something. In fact, there are a couple of writers and artists that I have worked with who do really good work if you just kind of let them be. But if you throw them something, you're like, you can't do this, right? You know, if you like throw down a gauntlet or you throw something and they have to get really creative and they turn out their best work that way.
That's actually how
Skid, I think you've read this, but the G.I. Joe Cobra Mirror Image Special. You've read that, right?
I might have.
Anyway, we'll talk about that another time. But okay. It's super, super cool. And it was thrown down like as a gauntlet.
Oh, is that the low light? Was that the low light one?
No, same writer anymore? Though. It's Mike Costa was the writer and Antonio Fuso is the artist. Oh. But the idea is in G.I. Joe, these twins, Tomax and Zaymont, they're the evil twins. And they like, if you punch one, the other one can feel it and stuff like that. Yeah. And so we were introducing them into the new continuity. And so we did this special and the entire issue is 22 pages. And the first 11 pages are Tomax. And you go through the first 11 pages and the last
page
of the 11 pages is like him looking in a mirror, like straightening his tie. And then page 12, right next to it is Zaymont looking in the mirror, mirror image of it. And then the entire back half of the issue is a mirror image of the entire first 11 pages, like down to like not just the layout of the different panel arrangements, but also like the way all of the figures and everything is positioned, where the word balloons go. And his whole thing was like, well, I want to do it kind of like Fearful Symmetry, the like famous issue of Watchmen that does something similar. And I was like, well, if you're gonna ape Watchmen, you have to out Watchmen. And so that was like the gauntlet, throwing it down was like, you have to do this thing, but you have to do it better. You know, like if Watchmen is alien, you have to be aliens. You have to build on it. You have to expand the threat. You have to go deeper into the gimmick or whatever. And it was great. It's like it's one of the best comics we've ever made.
I got to read that. I remember you telling me about it, but I never actually read it, but that sounds amazing.
Good stuff.
But real
there
quick,
you go, G.I. Joe fans.
Okay, G.I. Joe. The other thing, what you saying that like forcing obstacles in front of creators makes them oftentimes more creative. I was just thinking about this yesterday because I was watching the X-Files movie, Fight the Future, mm-hmm. which I saw it was a really good movie. I was very pleased with it when it came out of the theater. But that was one of the things that I loved about X-Files was that for me, it was like the first example of like, because you have these like supernatural kind of or you know sci-fi kind of horrific threats to people in like movies and film, but it was like they would always like figure out some dumb reason why the police can't get involved. They'd be like, oh, it's in a small town, it's just like the police don't believe them, and it's just like, yeah, whatever. And it's like there's one cop and he goes check it out and it just kills him and whatever. But the cool thing that X-Files did was it's just like, oh, there's a monster living in the sewers, we're going to send a FBI SWAT team. And it's like, then you have to like, as a writer, you're writing that story, you have to figure it out. Like, how does that, how can you get around that issue of like having your monster being faced with an FBI like SWAT team? And so long way to say that I want to pitch Aliens, Alien versus X-Files.
That'd be the funniest title. Aliens versus X-Files.
Aliens versus X-Files. Like the actual like filing cabinet.
The actual filing. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just a guy like throwing manila folders full of papers. Stop! You're super annoying!
Here's the one with the vampires.
Rolling it up and swatting it on the nose. Like, get out of here!
Oh, Jonathan. Alien Delta Green. Oh my God. I love that. I got to talk to Grant about that because that's great. I love that. So for, I get you guys probably Delta Green is sort of the government. It's in the Cthulhu H.P. Lovecraft mythos. And it was sort of the secretive government agency that was organized to combat the forces of the Cthulhu mythos after the event. Have you guys ever read Shadow over Innsmouth or know of it? Yeah. It was, yeah, it's one of the early like Cthulhu books, but there was this like this town in New England of in Massachusetts, these fish creature human hybrids, and they end up sending.
I think that's the only one I've read, I think.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, so Delta Green is like formed in like 1928 as a response to this, the revelation that there are these threats in the world, and anyway.
So when the things bump in the night, Delta Green is the agency that bumps back. So
exactly. Exactly. Alien versus Hellboy. Was that ever a thing?
Alien versus Hellboy. That should be. I don't know if that's a thing. They were both a dark horse, but I don't know if Mike would go for that. Mike was the creator of Hellboy. I don't know. He went for three movies, so I guess he'd probably go for it.
Yeah, he'd probably go for it. Okay, I think, does anyone have any final questions? Oh, Clippy makes an appearance. Good, yes, Joe. So you can't have an Aliens versus X-Files without Clippy. Anybody have any final questions or anything? You guys have any final thoughts about Alien?
I have one question. Is there going to be another, is there another one in production right now? I've found different answers online, but none of it seemed like super clear.
There's a TV series that Noah Hawley is doing, which I think could be really great. That's going forward, right? I mean, last I heard it was, which has me very interested. I think, you know, again, like sort of obstacles, like not just doing another film, but like changing the medium changes things. Noah Hawley is also really freaking good.
Awesome.
So, you know, I'm interested in that one.
We as humans, Jeremy again. Why can't I read the names either? We as humans love figuring out how to eat things that can kill us, like pufferfish or elephants. I don't think we figured out how to eat elephants. So aliens, how do we eat it? Good question. Yeah, maybe it's aliens meets Julie versus Julia.
I think...
that movie needs some spicing up, to be honest. It's a little boring. That's the one thing that's missing.
Somebody called James Cameron. We figured it out for him.
Okay. All right. Well,
awesome. Yep. Well, thank you all for coming again. Our next session is what, January 20th for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, do your reading. Do your reading, kids. Read Annihilation because we're probably going to talk about it.
Yes.
Comic book.
Big round of applause, guys. Great
Thank
conversation.
Thank you, Xavier.
Always, Thanks, Xavier. Always goes in some weird directions. I'm like, wow.
Sure, you didn't expect to hear about Howard the Duck for 15 minutes.
We went back to the 80s. We went all over the place. I really liked all the different variations. Whatever you could imagine is talked about in this podcast. I really appreciate it. Awesome. Well, thanks for everyone for tuning in. Always great to see you guys get involved with these dudes and keep up as well. It's very impressive. Love it, Vinny. I don't even know what you're holding there, but I'm impressed.
Oh
face
God.
Grabber.
Yeah. Face hugger. Oh, face my God, Vinny.
Oh, man.
Well done, Vinny.
Truly terrifying.
Awesome. And Tom, tell us again when the next session is. January 20th?
January 20th. Yeah, let me.
Great. And that is kicking off the Guardians of the Galaxy chat, which I'm excited for.
And yeah, for those who don't know, Andy was the editor and founding force behind the Annihilation run at Marvel. which was formed basically the impetus for the Guardians of the Galaxy film franchise. So it's I am so excited for that.
Pretty cool.
There's so much stuff to talk about with that. It's going to be really fun.
Very cool. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, look, thanks again so much. Always enjoy you three dudes and what you have to say. Very entertaining. And again, guys, thanks so much for joining us. And we'll let you get back to your Thursday night. And hopefully we'll catch you all again on January 20th. Happy holidays. Have a great one.
Thanks, everybody. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Xavier. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. Franchise Fan Guys.